Way out in the desert. Further than the eye can see. Beyond all towns. All roads. Where few have ever been.
Who'd put a welcome sign out here?
The hills still have eyes.
They'd already killed my mother, my older sister. And now the father, he's coming after us.
Somebody's out by the bus.
What's going on? Come in here.
The family of Jupiter holds sway. The sand runs with fire and blood. And the hills still have eyes.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Craven Craven, the podcast devoted to all things Wes Craven. This is episode 9, covering The Hills Have Eyes, part 2. I am one of your co-hosts, Patrick Bromley, joined as always by my co-host, Heather Wixon. Hi, Heather.
Hello. It's been so long.
I know, and two months ago, we covered Chiller, which was my least favorite Wes Craven movie that I had seen until this month.
Really? Okay.
I think I liked The Hills Have Eyes 2 less than I liked Chiller.
Maybe my standards were set super duper low on this one, but like it's not great by any stretch of the imagination, and we'll get into that, but like I don't think it was nearly as bad as everybody says it is. Like it's not good, but it's not the worst. It's not terrible. I actually thought it was less boring than Chiller.
If it was directed by someone else, I think a lot of people would probably be championing it as like some underrated 80s slasher.
Oh, absolutely.
But because it's Wes Craven, it's kind of at the bottom of the pile.
Oh, yeah. And I get it. I mean, it pales in comparison to its predecessor. But I think for like a sort of run-of-the-mill hack and slash from like the early to mid 80s, it was fine. Like, it's kind of ridiculous at points, but, I mean, what movie isn't from that time other than the original Nightmare on Elm Street? So, I don't know. It was funny because, like, I was getting ready for, like, just to be really annoyed the whole time. And I was like, it's not great, but it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess the summer doldrums have just already beaten any sort of resistance out of me. But I was like, I mean, you know, it's not great, but it's a movie that puts Michael Berryman in top billing. So how
true,
can I be mad at that?
True. And Wes Craven has been very open about the fact that this was like a cash job, that he needed the money. And so he agreed to make a sequel.
Totally.
And it does feel like a mercenary kind of for hire job. But let's get into it. I'm going to read the plot synopsis from IMDb, which reads, a group of bikers, which includes some of the survivors from the original film, already mistaken because he was clearly killed in the first film, embark on a journey by bus to a biker race. Oh, no, I'm sorry. This was some of the survivors. I'm thinking of the bad guys. Let me start over. A group of bikers, which includes some of the survivors from the original film, embark on a journey by bus to a biker race near the desert of the infamous incidents. However, because of a mistake, they are late and decide to take a shortcut through the desert. Halfway through the desert, the bus breaks down. There's a lot of detail in this plot synopsis. While trying to repair the bus, some of the group wander off and wind up in the traps of the survivors of the mutant family of the first. Then the mutants go after the rest. Dot, dot, dot.
That's what they decided in the plot synopsis? They could have just gone in for another few paragraphs and covered everything.
Lots. Oh, there is another synopsis that goes like blow by blow for the entire movie. I chose not to read that one because I figure, well, we're going to talk about the movie. I don't think we need to recount every single plot detail.
Yes. Yeah, it's, I mean, so I got really excited at the beginning because they have Bobby there and he's talking about what's going on. And of course, you know, sort of comparatively to something like Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, there's a lot of flashbacks in this one.
However, we need to talk about the fact that there's a flashback from a dog.
Right? Which is kind of like, okay, look, it's not a decision I would make as a filmmaker, but I kind of love it because how many times, okay, think about horror and think about the legacy of how we always complain about people killing the dogs in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Beast survives both movies.
True.
Beast is like the champion of horror dogs that never gets discussed. Because Beast comes through this twice. Twice.
I sense an article here.
I don't know. But it's just, it was one of those, I was like, oh, it's Beast. And then it was like, and Beast lives again. Because I was like, oh, they're just picking up the dog.
Right.
So they can kill it. Right. I mean, I literally was like, they're going to just kill him this time. And he lives.
He does survive. What is Beast doing when they pick him up? Is he just being put out to stud? Like, why are they paying $400? Is it so Beast can fuck?
Maybe.
Because people are talking, they're referring to Beast as a gigolo.
Yeah.
I got the impression that Beast was being hired to, like, stud.
Make some puppies.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a beautiful boy.
Indestructible German Shepherd puppies.
Yes, because like these puppies are going to last. Yes, they're like Duracell puppies. So, but yeah, I mean, even with a dog flashback, which I mean, again, I laughed, but I also thought it was amazing because I was like, first of all, I don't know what kind of drugs Craven was on because I mean, that's the only possible explanation for that where he's like, I'm gonna have the dog have a flashback, and then it's like he does the Wayne's World, and then like it's a wavy screen, and then the dog has a flashback, and I was like, yes, all right.
It would have been awesome if Beast just flashback to like eating,
right?
Like every time they cut to a flashback for somebody else, it's from the first movie and something horrible is happening, and then Beast gets his own flashback and it's just like a can of Alpo being opened.
Or he's taking a piss somewhere, or chasing a bunny. But he's like, no, I took down these mothers,
yeah.
The last one.
He remembers.
Like, that's what I'm remembering. Yeah. I was joking with Brian last night. I was like, they should have renamed the dog Pepperidge Farm. So then it would have fit in with the Pepperidge Farm Remembers meme.
Wow.
But, yes.
That's quite the deep cut there.
It is. But yeah, it was one of those where I was just like, all right, the dog is back. But then I was like, oh, they're going to kill him. But he lived. So already beyond my expectations for this movie. So like, all right, cool. I'm already not even able to rate this as my lowest ranking Craven movie.
Okay.
From that.
Because of the dog flashback. It is kind of the one novel thing that this movie does.
I honestly am like, you know what? We need more dog flashbacks in movies. We need more dogs to make it through from
I agree with
to
that, although, yeah. We're forgetting that Beauty, R.I.P., died.
Mm, yeah.
So that Beast could live.
So that Beast twice. Could live. Twice. Yeah, or maybe we just need to start having franchises built around dogs and horror.
Okay.
I mean, why not?
I can't think of any right now.
So, you know, let's make it happen.
Was Watchers, like, was the dog the main character in Watchers? Because I know there were sequels to Watchers, but I don't know if they were based around the dogs either. I don't know if I've ever seen Watchers. It's like Corey Haim and Michael Ironside, right?
Yeah, I remember seeing the original Watchers, and it has been so long since I've seen it. I never saw the sequels.
Okay. And I know the dog in Bad Moon is a main character because it's based on a book called, like, Thor, told from the perspective of the dog, I think.
Nice. But we don't have any Bad Moon sequels, do we?
No, you're right.
So what we're saying is we either need to create a franchise or do a Bad Moon sequel.
Yeah.
All right. I can dig it.
Yeah. I would be down for a Bad Moon sequel, by the way. Bad Moon rules.
That's another one that I haven't seen since I was a kid.
It's a good
but
one.
But I would... Yeah, I remember liking it.
Yeah.
I don't remember a whole lot about it.
As 90s werewolf movies go, it's near the top of the pack.
I see what you did there.
I did do something there, but mostly I was just trying to champion Bad Moon and say that there were not a lot of werewolf movies that came out in the 90s.
Yeah, no, there is definitely not a whole lot of them. Because I think the one that most everybody goes to is, like, what, Ginger Snaps?
Yeah, which I think is 2000. I don't even think that's the 90s.
Oh, I thought it was 99, so you're right.
I don't know. Jeez. It might be like a Canada 99.
Okay. And then Dog Soldiers?
Also 2000, I want to say.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dog Soldiers, I'm looking up 2002.
Jeez. I'm off.
Yeah. Well, and you know, these movies are 20 years old at this point, so.
Where does it go?
Where does it go?
Apparently it goes dirt biking.
You're talking like a dog having a flashback. Yeah, so I had never seen The Hills Have Eyes Part 2.
I hadn't either. So again, I was expecting a big heaping pile of trash. So maybe that's why I was like, oh, all right.
So this makes now Music of the Heart my last unseen Craven.
I have seen Music of the Heart. I have to figure out, do I have any
I can't imagine you do at this point, because now we're getting into like the big ones.
Oh, I know. I'm excited to talk about this because we're talking about Craven, but yeah, I'm trying to think. Movie-wise?
I can't imagine.
I've never seen The Entirety of My Soul to Take.
Oh, okay.
So that's...
Weirdly, I've seen it twice.
Okay. Okay.
But, so his last one is your last unseen.
Yeah, although if we go into Nightmare Cafe...
Oh, I haven't seen any of Nightmare Cafe.
No, I haven't either.
Yeah.
And we also talked about possibly doing his Twilight Zone episodes, which I've never seen.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you if I've seen. And that stuff we'd probably have to save to the end.
Yeah, we'll do like some sort of TV. We'll do like a TV episode, like with his little anthological type stuff.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah, but I think other than that, I think I just have to see My Soul to Take in its entirety.
Okay. Something I didn't know about The Hills Have Eyes Part 2 until I was doing research today was that he shot it in 1983. So for all the people wondering, like, how did he go back and do that after making something as transcendent, as influential? How did he make such a masterpiece like A Nightmare on Elm Street and then go back and do The Hills Have Eyes Part 2? Well, the reason for that is he didn't. He had actually already made The Hills Have Eyes Part 2, but it sat on a shelf for 1 to 2 years, depending on where you find your release date. Some places cite it as 1984, some places cite it as 85. For our purposes, I think we're calling it 85, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we are calling it 85. Do you think that was because of, one, the popularity of Nightmare on Elm Street? And then, well, actually, no, this because like when this came out in 85 here, it was before Nightmare because it was, oh, no, it was after. Sorry, I got my 84 and 85 screwed up in my head. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm really good at math, I promise.
I do these kinds of things all the time.
But I'm wondering if it was like a 1-2 punch of Nightmare on Elm Street hitting that sweet spot in 84 and then also... 84, 85 is when VCRs were really, really starting to take over America.
Yeah.
Which means more people probably were renting movies like the original Hills Have Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were probably like the 1-2 punch of like, well, we have a Wes Craven movie that's a sequel to a movie that he did that's been pretty decently received. Like, you know, I'm guessing that was probably the 1-2 combo that really got this movie like onto video shelves. Because I don't think it came out in... theaters.
If it did, it was a very limited release. Yeah, it basically went straight to video and what they're calling pay cable, which I'm assuming is some kind of like viewer's choice, which is what they used to call pay-per-view when I was a kid.
Ah, back in the olden days.
Yeah. I used to just watch the free commercials on Viewer's Choice, which is how I discovered a lot of movies, including Puppet Master and Spontaneous Combustion and Carnival of Souls, weirdly, was like a Viewer's Choice title. I don't know why they were releasing at that point a 25-year-old movie on Viewer's Choice, but they were.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have cable growing up, so it was like we would get tapes brought home from people who had cable, and they would just like randomly just tape a few movies off of HBO or whatever, and then you're like, oh, I guess I'm going to watch this movie because it's here.
Right. Well, so, that's how you used to find stuff, was because it would be on. Like, I'm not doing like an old man rant, but people curate their entire experiences now by going on to streaming services as opposed to just like being forced to see something because it's what came on next.
Yes. It's kind of a lost art, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's kind of cool that Shudder does their like streaming Shudder TV, you know? Because
sometimes I'll actually throw that on, just be like, all right, what's on the SlashX channel?
Right, exactly.
And then I'll just leave it on because it feels just kind of like that thing of like, oh, I'm going to turn on channel 60 and see what weird random movie's playing.
Exactly. So. And I've certainly had the experience of like turning something on for a few minutes that I had never seen and being intrigued enough to then go dig into finding it and streaming the whole thing beginning to end, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, it's, you know. Kids today, they just don't get it.
Well, between the death of the video store and, you know, losing the experience of, like, being forced to watch something because you only have four channels and, like, this is what's on.
Or when you're a kid and your parents are like, I'm watching this, and I guess you are too, because that's your only option.
Right.
So, I mean, I appreciated L.A. Law in its prime. But, you know, I don't know if it's a show that I would have necessarily tuned into otherwise. Although I did enjoy my Friday nights of Dallas and Falcon Crest when I was a kid.
Now, see, we had to go to bed when Dallas came on, but we were allowed to like stay awake in our rooms. So I could tell you note for note the theme to Dallas, which is a favorite of Erica's, by the way. She's obsessed with Dallas.
Yeah, I know Dallas.
But I never watched Dallas as a kid. I just would hear the theme song from my bedroom.
Interesting. I remember my mom used to be super obsessed with the Incredible Hulk TV show.
As were we all.
But I got scared when he would transform.
Was it like the super blue eyes?
I don't know what it was, but I was okay once he was transformed. It was like the act of transformation.
No, that's how I was with werewolves.
Interesting.
I couldn't watch the American Werewolf sequence in Terror in the Isles, which I used to watch Terror in the Isles all the time as a kid, but I would have to like leave the room during the American Werewolf section because I couldn't watch a person transform. I could watch the werewolf, no problem, but I couldn't handle the transformation. What do we call this? Because it's something we both suffer from.
I don't know. Is that weird? We weird?
I don't know. Maybe. I didn't I didn't like the transformation in Thriller either.
Oh, Thriller. Oh, my God. The end shot with the eyes.
Yeah.
I never could look at that.
All right. So you have a thing about eye color, obviously, because that was the Incredible
Hulk
thing.
We're working through our childhood traumas in this episode. I mean, this movie's about trauma. So there you go.
Is it, though?
I mean, it could have been.
It starts out being about that. And then
isn't about
that at all by leaving Bobby behind. And doing nothing with the Ruby character, it's not really about the trauma.
I mean, she's kind of turned her back on her family. And I mean, look, those of us who are well in sort of intertwined with Fast and Furious, you know that you don't turn your back on family.
No, that's the worst thing you can do.
That's the worst thing you could do. But I guess in the instance of cannibal families, I feel like you've got some leeway there.
You mentioned, I want to get sidetracked for just a moment, But you mentioned before we started recording that you guys have been marathoning the Fast and Furious movies. I'm going to need a ranking from you.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're doing 8 tonight.
Okay.
But so far...
So leaving 8 out of it, even though for me, 8 is easily the worst.
Yeah, I don't... I remember nothing from it. Because we just watched 7 last night. And okay. It freaking destroyed me.
Yeah.
Like, I was ugly crying. Like, Paul Walker was my best friend. Because I literally watched all these movies. And I was like, did I... Like, you know, there's been celebrity deaths that really affected me. And his is really sad. And the circumstances behind it are just really horrifying. And, you know, him leaving behind a family and everything like that. Like, it just, it sucks. But there was just something about watching that scene last night where they're sitting on the beach. And, like, everybody's talking about him. And, you know, they're not talking about Brian O'Connor. You know, they're talking about Paul Walker.
Right.
And I just... freaking lost it. Yeah. I was ugly crying. And then we're trying to talk about it once the movie was done, and I started crying all over again.
Well, don't start crying now, because I don't know how to get out of it.
You're like, I don't know how to deal with this crazy womanness. I think I still have to put 1 at the first, because you don't get anywhere else without it.
Okay.
And I think in retrospect, like, I really like 1. I mean, it is totally like a Point Break ripoff. In an alternate universe, we'd be all gearing up for Point Break 9. But we're not. We're gearing up for Fast and Furious 9. So I feel like I still have to put 1 at the beginning. Because there's just some really good character stuff. And I like the way that a lot of these sequels really took the time to acknowledge these things. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really good payoffs that come from that first movie that pay off in other movies.
Yeah.
And then I think my second one would be 5.
Yep.
Because, I mean, you know, Fast 5, rock. I was surprised at how really well I liked 6.
Okay.
Upon revisiting it. So I'm going 1, 5, 6.
Okay. And I haven't watched 6 much, but I know 6 felt a lot like 5 Redux, which isn't a bad thing, you know.
No, but I mean, it kind of opens it up a little bit more because you get Luke Evans.
Right, which I know is a selling point for you.
Yes, and it leads us to Statham. So you can't get to Statham unless you got Luke Evans. And Victor Taslim in it as well. So.
And it has the good sense to, like, throw Gina Carano off an airplane.
It does. It does. That's the one thing about 6 and 7 that bothers me. It was like this, like, hey, let's throw a UFC chick in here to get some really cool badass women, like, lady fights. And I'm like, Ronda Rousey is like the worst part of Part 7. Like, she has 4 lines in the movie and they're all terrible. They're all terrible. I kind of feel like I go 1 and then 5, 6, 7.
Okay.
I really ended up liking Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yes.
Way more than I was just kind of like, I was like, this is hella fun. So I would definitely do 2 next.
I have been making a case for years that 2 is sneaky great.
It really is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why people give it as much crap as they do, but it, like, again, it establishes, like, some really fun stuff, you know, with these characters who then come back and we get to really love and stuff. And then, you know, I think I'd do Tokyo Drift and then Fast and Furious.
Yeah, I think your ranking is pretty close to mine. I would put 2 probably above 6 and 7.
Okay.
And I could juggle 5 and 1 in terms of my preference. It's like
whatever day it is.
Exactly.
Like, I might be more in a mood for 1.
Right.
I mean, but the 5 is like the introduction of The Rock.
So 5 is where, like, what the series is kind of crystallizes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Where suddenly they're now like sort of these, there's suddenly like Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got all the characters from all the previous movies, you know.
Yeah, although I want them to bring back the brothers, and I'm totally blanking on their character names, that were in 5.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
At the end.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't remember if they pop up in 8. I honestly do not remember.
I don't think they do.
Later tonight. But they were really fun, and they added a lot of levity. But they also have Tyrese, who really adds, like, a lot of levity.
Right. That's kind of what he's for now.
Yes, but he's us. Like, they're doing these ridiculous things, and he's like, what are you doing? We're going to we're going to take cars and drop them out of airplanes. Like, you guys are crazy. And I'm sitting at home going, yes, Tyrese, you are the voice of reason right now. So yeah, it's weird. Like, if you would have told me in 2001 that 20 years later we'd be watching these movies still, I would have said you're bananas.
Yeah.
But here we are. And you know what's really even crazier about all of this is, like, my mom freaking loves these movies.
Yeah.
Like loves them. Like, I'm watching, like, last night, like, you get the girls with, like, their booties hanging out and dancing and, like, you know, am I seeing a nipple? I don't even know. And I'm like, these are the movies. And my mom is like, oh, my God, I love. I'm like, it's just kind of crazy. So, and she was like, I talked to her a few weeks ago and she's like, oh, she's like, I finally get a movie that I'm excited to go see in theaters. And it's Fast 9.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think those movies appeal to a lot of people that don't go to a lot of movies.
Yeah. It's so strange to me, too.
Yeah.
Seven has the best soundtrack, though. So
okay. I'll take your word for it.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah. So now that we've spent 20 minutes talking about the Fast and the Furious.
Well, that's
movies.
Why people listen to this Wes Craven podcast.
for our Fast and the Furious rankings. Yeah. That's what I feel like. I feel like that. But speaking of taking it fast and furious, but on dirt bikes.
Oh, yeah. Very nice. Nicely done.
Very nice. Thank you. That's why I make the big bucks.
I'm fascinated by the idea that A, Bobby and Ruby end up as some romantic couple, and B, Bobby and...
Are they romantic or are they just friends?
I don't know. They kiss on the lips.
But, like, is that sort of like... Because back then, like, guy friends and girlfriends did that.
I was born wrong time.
I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe they are. I mean, but, you know, again, trauma sort of, you know, when you've kind of gone through something like that, maybe.
Yeah. I guess the movie's not explicit about it. I found myself wondering the same thing. And then when they kiss on the lips, I was like, all right, I guess they're a couple.
Okay. But I mean,
anyway,
yeah.
So not only are they whatever they are, but have also invented a new kind of fuel, which I find fascinating. Like,
yes.
These things that are introduced in the first few minutes of the movie suggest a much more interesting movie than we end up getting.
Yeah, I think that is accurate. You know, I mean, I think once they get to the desert, it's sort of just the momentum kind of plummets a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it becomes The Hills Have Eyes with, like, kind of a higher body count, less interesting characters. Yeah, way less tension. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because I actually kind of like the characters in this movie. Like, they give us a chance to really sort of settle in with them. And it was funny because I didn't realize that what's-his-face, Kevin Spurtas.
Oh, yeah.
Was in this, who I believe is the guy who is the...
He's like the
love
romantic lead.
Friday 7.
Yeah. And he's in some subspecies movies to bring my full moon love into it.
Oh, yeah, he is, isn't he?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess he was on Days of Our Lives for a long time.
All right. Well, listen, there's definitely a soap opera connection with Wes Craven.
Yeah. So, you know.
With the Susan Lucci and the Invitation to Hell of it all.
Indeed. But yeah, so he was, I was kind of like, oh, it's, what's his face? Nick from Friday 7.
Yeah.
So at least it wasn't the highly evolved protozoa guy. So so it had that going for it. And I did think it was interesting how Ruby became sort of this other character in this movie. Because it was, again, it's one of those interesting things, like, you don't expect to see a reformed cannibal family member show up in a movie. And I also thought it was interesting that it is the same actress.
Yeah.
So they didn't even try to, like, recast, which is one of those, like, I kind of just would have expected it because we just sort of recast things a lot in horror.
Had they recast it, though, I probably barely would have realized that it's meant to be Ruby.
Yeah, I think it was the only reason it was because the flashbacks, and I could just see it in her eyes.
Right.
And the hills.
And she makes mention
eyes.
Of my brother. But, like, other than that, there's, like, almost nothing about the character that would lead you to believe that this is a reformed cannibal.
Yeah, but, I mean, I've never met a reformed cannibal.
Oh,
so
yes,
I'm not
you
quite
have.
Sure. Oh, Are you about to tell us something about yourself, Patrick, that we don't know?
Well, I wanted to rank the Fast and Furious movies first, and then I wanted to announce that, yeah, I grew up as part of a cannibalistic cult.
Oh, interesting. So that's why how we became friends. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing that I feel like they could have done something with that they don't really do much with. I mean, there's a few confrontations between Rachel and Pluto. I don't even remember if she meets up with Reaper or not. Oh, no, she does meet up with Reaper. Cause he's the one that's sort of chasing her first in the old house place.
The old house place.
So yeah, I mean, I wish they would have done something more with that, and maybe they would have, because I from what I is that this was a movie that, like, they started making it, they ran out of money, and what we got is what we got.
Yeah.
So maybe there was plans to do something a little bit more. I mean, who knows?
Well, it's so disappointing, because again, I'm interested in a movie that brings back both Bobby and Ruby. And that tries to reform Ruby into Rachel, the sort of 80s yuppie.
Yes.
But boy, yeah, no, nothing happens with that. And again, coming from Wes Craven, it stings even more, because it's like, oh, I could see where there would be something there. And to sort of bring these characters who are part of this, like, seminal 70s horror movie into the 80s, and to try to say something about that, the way that he later ends up doing by bringing, like, Nancy and Freddy into the 90s, you know, in New Nightmare. But yeah, this is not that movie.
No, I mean, I think at that point, Lowe, like, was anybody other than the original Nightmare on Elm Street, like, was anybody really saying anything with slasher movies?
No.
I mean, if you think about it, 1983, like,
right,
slasher movies were just there basically to watch pretty people get cut up,
which is what this movie ends up being. And again, I just expect so much more when you consider what Wes Craven's other, you know, quote unquote slasher movies are. It's super disappointing. You know, because this is probably closest to something like Shocker.
Yeah. And I mean, I think even Shocker has more to say.
Yes. Shocker is definitely a better, more interesting movie. But like, the other movies to choose from would be stuff like A Nightmare on Elm Street or New Nightmare or Scream. And any of those is infinitely more interesting than this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I was, like, kind of thinking about it. I was like, well, I mean, at least, like, this, to me, like, Chiller just felt like everybody was, like, sort of moving through molasses a lot of time. There wasn't any sort of, like, reactionary, like, there was no, like, oh, my God, we're in this scenario. Like, it was just kind of like, oh, okay, so the body's back and he's doing evil things. Oh, okay. Like, it just was sort of there.
Yeah.
I mean, at least this has a little bit of a pep in its step, if you will.
Sure.
It's not enough to save the movie, you know, from itself.
Yeah.
But for me, it felt at least a little more interesting to watch than Chiller.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. I think for me, it was like recognizing the confines of the TV movie genre. I guess I cut Chiller a little more slack than I was willing to cut this.
Yeah, which again is tough because it's Craven, so it's like,
right,
my bar is already high. But again, exactly, it was like one of these things, like, everybody's just like ragged on this movie for so many years that I was just like, I was expecting an abomination.
Yeah, it's, and again, not that.
It's definitely one of the most lesser of the Craven movies
one
ever.
One of the most lesser.
But like, it's still like, I would take this over a handful of other slashers.
Yeah.
Two, if that makes sense.
It's greatest crime is that it's a pretty generic average slasher, right? And a disappointing follow-up to a classic horror movie, which it's certainly not the first horror sequel to be guilty of that.
Yeah, like, it's a pretty average 1983 slasher that unfortunately comes in as a very subpar Wes Craven movie,
right? Right.
So, you know, but again, it's just one of those, like, I was like, okay, I mean, the setups are, you know, they sort of lack, again, like we talked about tension, they lack any sort of real tension. Again, you sort of have characters who are almost like too smart for their own good in certain cases, where like in the first one, it was just a family who's thrown into this horrible situation that they just don't know how to deal with. And they have to find ways to survive, where then like, they're like, oh, look at these tripwires and stuff. And I'm like, would you really be looking?
Right.
Cause like, I mean, you know, you're sort of being hunted at that point, but like, nobody is that aware.
Which they kind of take in stride.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a super big mess. But, you know, it's an entertaining mess.
Well,
but, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll put it this way. It is better than the Hills Have Eyes 2 remake.
I would probably agree with that, because that was a movie I really didn't like.
Oh, my God.
And Wes Craven was a writer on that, yeah?
Yeah. He was.
Him,
I don't understand that.
Son, am I remembering that correctly?
I believe so.
Yeah.
That was a really big disappointment for me.
Because I really liked the remake.
Yeah, I did too.
And I've only seen the sequel to the remake, which is not a remake of this movie.
No, but it's the best.
I've only seen it once, right? And I remember really not liking it. And finding it to be pretty mean-spirited. Written by Wes and Jonathan Craven.
Mm. Yeah, that was a super bummer summer of a movie. Probably up there with, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning.
Another movie I don't like, yeah.
Yeah, that was just kind of like the one, two missteps of those. I was just like, oh, no, what are we doing? especially because we were in that great boom of, like, horror remakes,
right?
And everything was going smoothly, and then we went and did these sequels, and it was like, oh
yeah.
Oh wait, hold on, you know, can't get a redo on that. I will tell you what though, this by far has to be the laziest score that I've ever heard from Manfredini in my life, because it's literally a Friday the 13th score, and like, maybe they didn't have money for it, and like, he just like threw Friday the 13th into it. I don't understand what happened there, but it is literally Friday the 13th 3 and 4 with the score. It's ridiculous, like to the point where it's almost distracting at times, because if you look away for a second, you're like, oh, am I watching Friday? Oh wait, no, I'm still watching The Hills Have Eyes Part 2.
Which again,
I can't even believe it.
Yeah, no, it's insane. And Henry Manfredini is not,
I mean, he pretty much stays within his wheelhouse.
Yeah,
when
he
it comes
tends
to scores.
Recycle himself quite a bit.
But this was egregious.
Yeah,
this is
like on a new level.
I was like, I actually had to pause it because Brian's like, are you kidding me right now? Because because Sunday was the 13th, so we did Sunday the 13th, so we watched 1 through 5. You'd be so proud, we watched part 5. So we just blazed through all the Friday the 13th movies on Sunday. And so that's like all of those music like cues and stuff were like really fresh in my head.
Yeah.
And so we turned this on and I was like, oh, I just feel like I'm watching another Friday the 13th. Okay. So I don't get that at all.
Well, and that, you know, again, leads it to feeling like this generic 80s slasher, because yeah, it ends up being, especially once Pluto is dead, you know, it ends up being like just another, not Friday the 13th, but another Friday the 13th imitator, you know?
Yeah.
Once it becomes all about the Reaper, you know? Which even the Reaper's makeup is garbage. Like, it doesn't even match. And maybe
and
that's an issue of, like, high def, but man.
But even still, like, because I'm pretty sure this movie had a bigger budget than the first movie. And somehow,
supposedly this was made for $700,000 and the original's budget is somewhere between $350 and $700. So yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and like everything in this movie just felt cheaper.
Yeah.
Cheaper in the Reaper, I guess.
Reaper rhymes with cheaper.
Yeah. It does. Yeah, I get it. It's like also like you know, you have John Bloom, you know, who is like the sort of big guy that should be really scary.
Yeah.
And he kind of just looks like he's cosplaying like some weird theme park or something.
Yeah, like he's cosplaying the original Hills Have Eyes, you know.
Yeah, that's a bummer. He died pretty young, though, I realized when I was looking him up. I didn't realize he died at like 54.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like I looked up because he's like he's a big, big guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, gosh, how have they never had him at horror conventions? But I realized he died in 99. So explains it.
That does explain it. I will say that seeing his name in the opening credits and having never seen this movie before, there was part of me mm-hmm. that was hoping that this was like that it was actually Joe Bob Briggs.
Could you imagine?
You know, because his name is John Bloom, but
right?
but somehow I was like, I feel like somehow I would have heard of that before, you know, or that it would have come up on his show before.
I wonder if they were friends.
Yeah, I don't know.
Do you think that John Bloom's got together and had like a Bloom off or something?
Well, I know there's some sort of rule that two John Blooms can't occupy the same space. Because then it turns into Ron Silver from Time Cop. But.
Holy shit.
But
that's
I don't know
amazing.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh, now I want to go watch Time Cop.
As you should.
Oh, as I should.
Once
I mean,
you get through all the Schwarzeneggers, you gotta start on the Van Dammes.
I guess. We've been talking about going into the Van Dammes.
As you should.
I know.
Although,
yeah,
once you get into some of the later Van Dammes, it gets a bit dodgy.
I mean, there's a few that I saw in theaters, so.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do?
As long as you stick with those, you should be safe, but.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the last Van Damme was that I saw in theaters. I'm looking it up really quick.
Okay,
I remember
good.
There's one where he shows his butt, and my mom got really excited. I was like, that's not awkward.
Yeah, I mean, he was
fan.
In the 90s. He was a fan of showing his butt, so.
Yeah. Oh, you know
that
what
doesn't
I mean?
Really narrow it down.
I don't. Oh, you know what it was? It was Nowhere to Run.
Which is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember liking that one a lot.
It's got Rosanna Arquette. How can it be bad?
I know. Also, I just noticed it has a Culkin in it.
It does have a Culkin.
Yes. Oh, my God. Was the last one.
And
I
Ted
saw
Levine,
theaters?
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Fast and Furious. Oh my God, I think, and I can't even believe this, I think, oh, this is so embarrassing to admit, I think my last Van Damme in theaters was Double Team.
I definitely saw Double Team in theaters, so you have nothing to apologize for.
Oh my gosh, I think that was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not a great movie, but I saw it at the time because not only was I a huge Van Damme fan, I was also a huge Dennis Rodman fan when he was playing for the Bulls. So
of course it was, you're from Chicago. Like we had,
right.
We had to be, you know, you could not stray from the Chicago Bulls in the '90s.
But like, I don't know that like I would have gone to see a movie if Steve Kerr was in it. I mean, I might have, but
yeah, he doesn't really seem like a super charismatic guy.
because it was Dennis Rodman, I had to go.
Yeah, he's like the Scottie Pippen of white guys of the Bulls, where he's just like, yeah, he's impressive, but like,
right.
He's not Michael Jordan.
Right.
So.
But I like,
know.
I read Dennis Rodman's autobiography. I had a Dennis Rodman t-shirt. I was all
in. So you were a Bulls fan and you were cool?
Exactly.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I know. Pretty weird, right?
I know. Yeah, that is weird. Because we didn't go to high school together, so I didn't know how cool you turned out.
Right.
Here, I just thought you were doing theater, but I didn't know you were actually cool, too.
Yeah, no. Turns out, I was two things can be true at once.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. You're just talking crazy.
But yeah, I did not love Double Team when I saw it, and I still don't love it, although it's been a few years since I last saw it.
I have not seen it since theaters.
Okay. Well, maybe it could be part of your rewatch.
Maybe it could. I could, that's going to be later on.
Sure. Well, you have a lot of stuff to get through before then, in terms of, like, yeah, in terms of, you know, the Van Damme output.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot more than I remembered.
How did we get on this?
I'm not sure. We're talking action, and then John Blooms came up, and then you went into Time
Cop. Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, because we were talking about John Bloom.
I just followed that thread.
Yeah, I found myself. I will say that, like, in terms of the cast, I liked Cass, although she does have some magical, like, Daredevil blind powers.
Right. Well, it heightens all her other senses.
Right. there's some stuff that, like, they explain. Like, she heard the bubbles. In terms of, like, how does she know that this guy's drinking a Pepsi? But then there's some stuff that they just do not attempt to explain at all. In terms of, like, but she's blind. How is she able to do that? But in terms of the performance, I mean, I liked her. Everybody else, kind of varying degrees of generic. Even though, like, one of them is played by Willard Pugh, who would go on to play the mayor in RoboCop 2, memorably. And one of them was played by Penny Johnson, who would have a long run on Star Trek Deep Space Nine and would play the scheming first lady.
I was going to say, wasn't she the president's wife?
Yeah, on 24.
On 24,
And she was great on that.
She was. It was funny because, like, when we were watching it, we're like, oh my God, that's, we're like, oh, don't trust her.
Yeah.
So I've learned what character actors to trust and not to trust.
Got
basically from watching 24. Like when the guy who played Aaron, who was like the right hand man to the president, shows up in anything, I'm like, oh, you're good.
Right.
He's going to get you, but he's got your back.
Yeah.
But, she shows up.
Right. Not to be trusted.
Nope. And she's actually in I remember just from my Freddy's Nightmares rewatch, she's in an episode of that, too.
Oh. Now, that's a show.
That is a show.
That is a bit hit and miss. More miss than hit.
I was going to say way more miss than hit.
Which I think, most of the creative team behind the show would agree with.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of who because I recently talked to David Miller, and we were talking a little bit about the show, and he was like, yeah, I didn't really go to set very much for it because they couldn't afford to have me on set.
Okay.
So they had just random people there trying to put Freddy makeup on and such.
Right.
So.
Perhaps the same people that worked on Hills Have Eyes Part 2.
Yeah, because, like, why would you care about the way Freddy Krueger looks? I mean, especially when he's barely used in some of the second season, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I have to wonder, like, how many of those little, like, whatever you would call them, you know, the intro and the closer, did they knock out in one shot?
Oh, I would imagine quite a bit, because, like, a lot of times, I've talked to a few people who worked on that show, and they were sometimes, like, taping 3 to 4 episodes simultaneously.
Right.
Like,
so you have to figure, stages. I mean, Robert Englund did, what, 3 days? I mean, I don't know for sure.
Yeah, so he's basically just popping in and out from everywhere, like, where do you need me? Do you need me over here? All right, do you need me to come over here? I can say something really quippy over here. So, you know, I mean, hey, he got paid. What does he care?
Right, exactly.
So, but yeah, that was such a strange show because they were just cranking them out like so quickly.
But
and,
I mean,
it shows.
I definitely remember like trying to stay awake through Saturday Night Live as a kid.
Just so you get to Freddy's Nightmares.
Yeah, because that's when it would come on in Chicago. And at least at one point. I mean, it probably juggled time slots a lot. But I definitely would like try to stay awake so that I could make it to Freddy's Nightmares. And I was sometimes successful.
Yeah. My favorites were when Saturday Night Live would get preempted for Saturday Night Main Event.
Definitely. Yeah.
And then you go from Saturday Night's Main Event into Freddy's Nightmares.
Yeah.
That was the sweet spot for me.
Well, because it's checking literally all of your boxes.
Oh, yeah. Every box at, like, you know, 10-year or 8 or 9 year old or yeah. however old I was, because yeah. that was 89. So, I was 11. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So 11-year-old me, geez. I don't know how old I was anymore. what is time? What is an age?
Nope, I lost it. Forget it.
All right.
I had it for a second.
And then it's gone.
And then it was
just
gone.
Like the budget for Hills Have Eyes 2.
Literally.
We had it and then it was gone.
Just vanishes. Wait, how often would Saturday Night's Main Event preempt Saturday
Night Live?
It was
only like
I don't know.
Like maybe once a quarter
okay.
or so.
Yeah,
like
that
once
sounds
every
about right.
couple of months.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I went back and rewatched all of those when we used to have the network, when they used to do the network, because now it's part of Peacock. But, yeah, we actually, when we first got the network, that's the first thing we did is went back and watched all the Saturday Night's Main Events.
Nice.
Yes, priorities.
I remember once leaving a VCR to record because I knew I wasn't going to be able to stay awake. So I just set up the VCR and let it record like overnight. And not only did it record Saturday Night's Main Event, it then went on to record, I want to say, Ghost Story, which
Ooh.
Aired on television like right after Saturday Night's Main Event. That was my introduction to Ghost Story.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, although there's way less of Craig Wasson, but you know.
Yeah. Sadly, they cut it out for broadcast television.
Imagine that.
So I didn't get to see his Wang until the Scream Factory Blu-ray. But yeah, it's a weird thing to go right from like Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff into a geriatric Fred Astaire. You know, it's a weird thing.
And Richard Houseman, I think, is in that too.
John Houseman,
sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
That is right. I actually saw that because somebody had rented it, and my mom and I were there. I think it was my aunt had rented it, and we watched it there. And it really freaked me out as a kid. And then I remember once we got a VCR, like, she rented it a few more times. So I apparently was up on the Wasson Wang at a very early age.
Sure.
So
But
I was really excited when that Blu-ray came out.
Yeah.
So I revisit it every October.
The thing about Craig Wasson's Wang is that it ends up being a pretty formative Wang.
It really does.
Like for a lot of people, if you saw it as a kid.
Yeah. And I mean, it also is kind of part of the problem in A Ghost Story too. So, you know, it's the power of Wasson. So, but I do remember like when he showed, I think that was probably one of the reasons I could talk my mom into going to Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3. Was because he was in it.
Right. You remember his Wang.
So, I mean, I didn't really at that point, but like, I'm sure she did.
Sure.
I didn't ask. I'm not going to ask because I don't need to have that conversation, but, you know.
Listen, we'll agree to disagree.
Okay. If you'd like to have my mom on the next show, you can ask her all about it.
All about Wasson's Wang?
Yeah, that's going to be our next spinoff show. We're just going to go through his filmography and figure out which ones you see as Wang in and which ones you don't. It might be a pretty short show, though.
Yeah, basically.
I didn't mean it that way.
It's going to be basically be Ghost Story, you know.
Yeah. I don't know if he did it ever again, but.
I can confirm that he does not in Body Double, nor in Dream Warriors, and that's about it.
Okay, I knew definitely not Dream Warriors, but I wasn't sure about Body Double.
Sure.
Okay. So, it's been a long time since I've seen Body Double.
Sure.
So, anyway.
But the thing is about Hills Have Eyes Part 2. no, I mean, I didn't have anything to finish that sentence. I just wanted to make it sound like we were still talking about it.
Yeah. This is another one. Like, I'm just ready to like get into the good stuff, I think, at this point. I mean, you know, we've had some sort of, all right, movies, I'm ready to get into the nitty gritty, which we're going to start doing soon. So,
yeah.
And it's been a really long time since I've actually seen Deadly Friend.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's so, like, we go from, it literally goes what, like, Deadly Friend,
Serpent
in the Rainbow, Shocker. Like, is that the mm-hmm. next three?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad run.
Mm-mm. And then we have People Under the Stairs after that.
Yeah.
So, you know, God bless Universal for just letting Craven do whatever he wanted to do in the late 80s and early 90s.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Is that literally the Universal run?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Until My Soul to Take. And that was a Universal also.
Okay. Wow, yeah, so, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Not bad.
So, you know, we've done the work now. Now we get to enjoy the fruits of our labor as we move forward.
Yeah. Well, again, had it not been for Music of the Heart, like, this would have kind of capped off the I haven't seen this between Invitation to Hell, Chiller, and now Hills Have Eyes Part 2. That was kind of it for me, at least. But yeah, sadly, Music of the Heart still hanging over me.
Mm. Well, we'll get there.
Yeah.
It's going to be a while, but we're going to get there.
Right. And I'm certainly not going to do the thing where, like, I watch it now. You know what I mean? Just to get it out of the way. Like, to get the unseen Craven out of the way. Like, I'll definitely wait until we get there. But there is a temptation, like, to watch it now.
Yeah. I just realized, like, Deadly Friend is never got a Blu-ray.
No, definitely not.
And the DVD is $28.
Oh, good Lord.
So I guess I'll be renting that one. I don't know if I have, maybe I have the DVD of this from, like, years ago.
I know I do. And it's not streaming anywhere, really?
It's you can rent it for like $1.99 on Amazon.
Not bad.
Not bad.
That, I mean, is what maybe, we call maybe, standard maybe, def pricing.
Yeah, maybe Tubi will come through.
Yeah, it's definitely not on there now, but by the time we get there, I mean, it's conceivable.
Yeah, it looks like everywhere you have to do is just pay to rent it.
Yeah.
All right. I have to go pay for a Christy Swanson movie. Great.
Oh, shit. By the way,
yes.
when I jokingly say that sounds like standard def pricing, turns out, yes, I'm wrong. That's actually high def pricing.
Ooh.
Because, yeah, you can rent it in HD for $1.99. You can buy it in HD for $6.99 on Amazon. Mm.
Interesting.
Right. Which means an HD master exists.
Exists. It's,
which means, right, there is no reason it shouldn't be out on Blu-ray, Scream Factory.
Yeah, because, like,
I'm talking to you,
Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Although I think they're starting to not do as much with their Warner Archives now, so who knows?
Right.
But, you know,
but they do work with Scream Factory. So
they do.
Yeah.
Maybe our summer Scream Factory announcements will come through for us.
Interesting. I mean, it's not like it hasn't happened before in terms of, like, us willing a Scream Factory title into existence.
I mean, I've done it twice already. Yeah. So
what were the two specifically?
April Fool's Day and Silver Bullet.
Okay. Well, there you go.
There you go. And I guess kind of Terror in the Isles.
Okay.
But, I mean, that existed on the Halloween 2 Blu-ray, so, you know.
Right. And, to be fair, Deadly Friend? Maybe not on the same level. in terms of your relationship to it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's, I mean, I'll rent it for $1.99. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
at least it's rentable. Like, there are definitely, you know, there have been movies in the past that, like, you either had to buy it on DVD or, you know. So at least it is rentable. Because it's not, like, one of his best.
No. I mean, it's not me. It's not worth paying $28 for a DVD.
Exactly. Right. Anything else about The Hills Have Eyes Part 2, considering the fact that we haven't said that much about it?
I mean, I think we've said everything there is to say. It has great opening credits. All I right. like the opening credits a lot.
All right.
I like that Beast is the... Beast makes it through both movies.
Yeah. As does Bobby, to be fair.
Yep, but he kind of punks out, so he doesn't right. really count.
Right. Well, that's the thing. He makes it through this movie by virtue of the fact that he sits it out.
Yeah, which, I mean, is the case for, like, anybody, really.
Right.
You're like, exactly. I didn't go put myself in harm's way, but I lived. You're like, does that count, though? I don't know.
And, you know, it does the thing that I do not like a sequel to do, which is that it brings back a character and then kills them off. And it does it in, like, the least interesting way, which is to say that it has Ruby, like, I don't know, bonk her head on a rock? Like...
Yeah.
I'm not even positive I would know that she was dead had I not, like, read the Wikipedia summary, in which it references, like, she fatally hits her head on a rock. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I don't know.
Kind of feel like that deserved a little bit more.
Yeah, like...
I feel like the whole movie kind of deserved a little bit more.
Not great, guys.
What are you going to do?
Not great.
Which is, again, why I'm thinking there might have been something else to that movie that once they ran out of money, they just right. couldn't do.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, maybe that really wasn't supposed to be her fate.
Right.
So.
Not that I would have, like, wanted her to have some kind of worse fate, you know?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. And correct me if I'm wrong, Deadly Friend is, like, it's, like, based on, like, a YA novel, right?
I believe it is.
Okay.
I want to say that it is, because I feel like that's how I kind of knew about it.
Yeah, I mean...
Yes, it is.
Okay. I couldn't say for sure. I just, I kind of thought so, because it has that vibe.
Yeah, yeah. It was based on a novel that was written in 1985. So, novel came out, and they're like, let's make a movie into
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yeah, or out of it.
Well, and I ask because I'm like, do I bother trying to track
reading
it down and and reading it before we get to it?
Now I'm thinking about it, too.
To be
I
fair,
bet there's probably a...
I probably okay, won't.
Maybe I'll do it. Maybe I'll have something on my Kindle or something.
All right.
I'll do some research. I'll let you know. This is how prepared we are, everybody.
Right. Well, it's just funny to me that, like, we literally watched a porn at one point. Like,
we watched a porn.
Such was our investment.
Yes.
And now I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. I don't know.
I might have to go for the book.
All right.
We'll see.
I appreciate it.
All right. Maybe I'll put in the work.
Thank you.
I got nothing else going on.
I'm not sure that's true.
It's not. But, you know, right. What's one more thing at this point?
All right. Well.
I feel like that's it.
All right.
Yeah. I think it's time to put a pin in Hills Have Eyes 2 and look towards the future, my friend.
All right. Well, then, thank you guys for listening. And
we hope you enjoyed our Fast and Furious podcast.
If nothing else, we'll see you guys in a month for Deadly Friend.
Yes. Which I'm sure we'll have a lot more to discuss.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a lot more to dig in. I think now we're getting into the stuff where you can really start to pick apart Kraven
right.
a little bit more.
Right.
You know, where he's a little more loosey-goosey. You know, as opposed to like this, where he was just kind of doing it for money, or like the TV movies where he was kind of like confined to what he could do within that space. Like, we're going Wild West, Wes Kraven coming up.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about it.
Yeah, me too.
So.
All right. Well.
Yeah.
On behalf of my co-host, thank you guys. One way or another, this feels like maybe the weirdest show we've ever done.
It probably is. Probably isn't. I don't know.
Yeah. And that I'm just
it's up there though.
Like, I just, I like, I, whatever. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you guys next time.